You're listening to an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and as part of our Making It Accessible series for Global Accessibility Awareness Day, we are talking to blind and partially sighted people who aim to try and make something more accessible for the blind and partially sighted community. Today, we are talking about what some would describe as quite a niche subject, but an interesting one at that. We are talking tabletop gaming. And to tell us more, a little bit about something he's working on, I'm joined by Scott Perkins. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you've mentioned you're an avid fan of tabletop gaming, a hobby that has been considered often as very sight-intensive, but often these days made more accessible. What was the kind of specific experience that made you realise that there is a need for a dedicated accessibility sort of guide or series for gaming shops and clubs?
I think for me, it wasn't so much I saw there was a need as much as I saw it was something that I was interested in as a partially sighted person. And I just thought, if there's one of me, there's going to be other people who might need or want this sort of thing out in the world. So I thought, you know, I've got something resembling, admittedly, a small platform. So I'll try and do it and, you know, hopefully make someone else's life a little bit easier.
What are the primary accessibility pillars that you look for when you walk into a new venue for the first time?
I look at mostly five criteria. Location, how easy is it to get to via public transport? What are the connections like there? For someone who, you know, a lot of disabled people can't drive, so it's not easy to get to. And I think especially important in London, where even people who are perfectly able-bodied don't drive because the connections are so well embedded in the city, it's still useful for them as well. I also look at how easy is it to access the venue once you're there, because it's all well and good knowing that it's a 20-minute bus ride. If it's down an escalator or a dozen flights of stairs, then that's fairly useless to someone who might be in a wheelchair or have other difficulties walking up and down stairs. Staff is important. You know, how helpful are the staff in the instance that a place might not be easily accessible? Are the staff able to at least bridge some of those barriers? Are they polite and friendly? What are they like with guide dogs? Obviously, you know, you can't refuse assistance dogs, but there are some people who will often be quite begrudging of that. I thankfully have never had that issue in my experience. I don't have a guide dog, but I know people who have had problems getting into places. And also community is important to me. I've never had any major problems with the people at a venue, but you can often find the community and the staff mirror each other. And finally, what's the stock like? Again, this is something that's important to anyone interested in tabletop gaming. You know, if it's all the same thing, then you might not be interested in going there. And also prices. Are the prices good? You know, we're in a cost of living crisis. As time goes on, I've only filmed one of these so far, but as time goes on, it's something that I want to build on and adapt to what people want and need from it.
I'd like to find out a bit more about tabletop gaming and these sorts of clubs, because you've mentioned what kind of accessibility things you look out for, but what are some of the common accessibility issues that can pop up in tabletop gaming? And, you know, tell me a little bit more about these kind of shops and clubs and what they offer, and therefore what may be some of the accessibility challenges within the venues itself that could be happening as well.
One of the main ones is getting in. There are a couple of places that come to mind in London that are wonderful venues, but are quite challenging for people who might be disabled, whether that's visually impaired or have difficulty, you know, who are in wheelchairs or use crutches, for example. If there's like a tournament or a release happening, can people get in even at peak times? And sometimes that's not the case. I went to a shop called Darksphere about 18 months ago. They're fairly well known in London and across the country as quite a major location for, you know, prices and for events. And it was just too crowded in there at that time, to the point where I think it was dangerous for it to have been that crowded. As politely as I could, I just went, hey, I think this is too crowded, both for able-bodied people, but especially for anyone who does have mobility issues. And they were like, yep, we've had feedback like this already today. We're going to try and mitigate and alter the number of events we have at one time going on.
Now, we're talking about gaming clubs and shops in this particular piece rather than tabletop games themselves and their accessibility. But can you give me a very brief summary of what a tabletop game is that can be played at these venues?
Tabletop gaming encompasses everything from card games like Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Magic the Gathering would be the most commonly known ones to the general public. And then there's tabletop wargaming, like Warhammer is the big one, and role-playing games in Dungeons and Dragons, which is a massive, you know, especially since the movie came out a couple years ago, has become something of a household name. Also, I guess Stranger Things did a lot to help Dungeons and Dragons as a brand and a name.
How do you approach a venue owner to explain that you are not just there to critique them, but rather to help them become more inclusive?
A lot of places like this are small businesses. Even the ones that are known further afield are still, in the grand scheme of things, compared to your high street brands, they're small businesses who are just trying to get by. So it's often a case of just asking them. The way I film these videos is I ask, first off, if it's all right to take photos of their venue. I explain what I'm doing, why I'm taking photos. And so far, like I said, I've only recorded one of these videos at a venue called Bad Moon Cafe. And they were like quite interested when I explained, here's what I'm doing. I'm trying to raise awareness for accessibility. And at least the staff behind the bar were quite interested in knowing, you know, what I thought of there when I explained. I'm really happy to see that there's a good wide area for people to get in. And also I mentioned how helpful they were when I was looking for something. They were very quick to go, yep, cool, we'll get that right away for you. I'd love to see more venues embracing communities like disabled people.
When it comes to you maybe telling them what the issues are in your videos, you know, are there any potential low-cost, high-impact suggestions you can find yourself giving to these venues to help blind and partially sighted people?
The best advice I can always give to a venue or a shop is just be open-minded, be polite. And all of the places I've been to that I visit on a regular basis, whether I'm filming, all of these places I've visited at least once or twice in the past, and all of them have always been very pleasant.
How do you evaluate whether the club's vibe and or culture are welcoming to the blind and partially sighted community?
I can often get a good vibe by just hanging around there for a few minutes, or, you know, maybe an hour or two, or just repeated visits. You can often get a feel for the sorts of people there. You can often tell what the community is going to be like by speaking to the staff, or the other way around, speaking to the community and finding out what the staff are like, because they tend to attract one another. Oftentimes I will speak to people and mention that I'm registered blind, and they're nothing but polite and often interested in how I get along with this hobby, being who I am with the difficulties I have.
What is the main thing that you want a blind or partially sighted person to feel after they watch one of your shorts?
I want them to know that there are people out there that deal with these problems that will be able to help you. I think the tabletop gaming community is so accepting of all people in all walks of life. If someone is partially sighted and is wondering if they should get into tabletop gaming in any way, shape or form, then it's okay to jump into it arms open and just have fun with it. If you're struggling, then you'll probably find a community that's able to help you with that.
When you do release more of these videos and people would like to see them, you know, is there somewhere they can find you to be able to see the content you put out?
Future episodes I will be putting up on YouTube. The YouTube channel is Ready Aim Roll. I want to do more of these, like I say, just to have that knowledge base available for people, whether they're disabled in any way. I want to do more for this community.
Fantastic, Scott. Well, that sounds quite interesting. And it's also good to showcase that blind and partially sighted people can be into things that, well, some people may not consider them being into. It's always good to put your name out there where you can. So thank you very much, Scott Perkins, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
For more interviews, features and shows, go to your favourite podcast provider and search for RNIB Connect Radio.